And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, of course, the big news this week was the hearings, the January 6th hearings, which I understand Republicans are not watching, but 15 to 20 million other people living in the United States are watching. And this last one was targeted right at Crump. And what a lot of people who commented about it afterwards said that was that they were shocked that Trump didn't do anything to call off the mob. He just didn't do anything. That's what astounded them. But I think they misunderstood what they were watching. Trump was the general who sent the mob to work. He had a military purpose. He wanted them to disrupt and, if possible, disperse the Congress. And he had to give them time to do it. And he sat and he watched. And he waited until it was clear that it wasn't going to happen and that the troops of the United States were coming to disperse his mob. And at that point, he called a retreat. That's what he did. It wasn't that he was derelict. He had a plan. He was carrying out his plan. That's what I see.
Yeah, but you have to take everything in its totality here. What we saw that this committee has done, and because of information that keeps coming forward, they're apparently aren't done. This was supposed to be their last hearing. They're going to have more in September. But there were several plans by Trump and his cronies to keep him in power. The first one, of course, was his universal plan that I couldn't lose the election only if it's stolen. But he needed better backup on that. So they went to court. And of course, in court, we had all sorts of, well, out of court, we had all sorts of allegations. But in court, we had all those things, like Rudy Giuliani said, no, we're not saying that there was fraud. They couldn't prove it. Of course, Rudy's other famous quote that came out in this was, we have theories, we just need evidence to back them up. And there was no evidence to back them up. And then they were going to try to, this other plan was to phone, to stop or to get things counted that really shouldn't have been counted. You know, the call that was made to Georgia, find the 11,780 votes or something like that. The calls that were made to Arizona and the calls that were made around to Michigan and around the country trying to really find votes that weren't there or to disqualify votes that were there. And then they came up with this plan C, the John Eastman plan, that nobody, I guess, Team Normal wouldn't go for Team Crazy, which was the backup people with Sidney Powell and the guy from Overstock and Michael Flynn and Rudy Giuliani. But what they wanted to do was to disrupt, well, first to get Mike Pence to say that he wasn't going to count certain states' votes that were challenged. There were six or seven votes, states were challenged. And then when he said he wouldn't do that, their plan was, as you said, to physically disrupt this. And Donald Trump wanted to be the leader of this. He wanted to be the one, have this group that was on the steps of the Capitol part like the Red Sea parted, and like Moses, he was going to run up to the top of it and essentially yell charge and have them go in. And the whole idea was to have to disrupt this so that the count couldn't be completed on January 6th, and then have these states with these phony electors, the legislatures, where there were Republican, like in Minnesota, I'm sorry, Michigan and Pennsylvania, and Georgia and Arizona, say that, no, the electors that were approved by the to go to the Electoral College were the wrong electors, and that we have these new electors and that you had to count them. And that's what it was about. And it came to close to happening, but it didn't happen. It was sort of like Pickett's charge in Gettysburg. They tested the right flank, they tested the left flank, and then they decided to put everybody running up the middle. And they got repelled at the last minute.
Well, I think that his problem wasn't that he didn't have a good plan. His problem was that he didn't have the right organization to implement the plan, which I know now these Trumpists are trying to rectify. I mean, if he had the right people in place as secretaries of state, the part about calling disqualifying the elected electors, that would have happened. They would have done that. But he didn't have the right people in place, and he didn't quite grasp that that's what he had to have. That was essential. And down the line, if you look at what organizational components his plan required, at no time did he have the right people in the right place to carry out the plan. And in the final analysis, the people that he thought were the most loyal to him turned on him. They wouldn't do it. They just wouldn't do it because he hadn't prepared them to do it.
Well, he thought he had the right people. He thought he had these judges that he appointed.
He thought he had the judges, but he didn't have the right judges. He thought he had a staff. He thought, yep. I mean, could you or I or he imagine that somebody like Ms. Hutchison, who was Mark Meadows' assistant, would turn on him? Or that his assistant press secretary, who's responsible for coming up with the words that he utters, would turn on him? It never occurred to him that these people close to him, as they say, lips to teeth, would turn on him. He didn't bother to indoctrinate them. He didn't bother to win them politically. He just thought inevitably they would follow. Doesn't work that way.
Yeah. There were some other people in this there, you know. On January 5th, we had that meeting at the Willard Hotel. And, Steve Bannon was one of the people that was, I think, getting together with the groups that may have been more organized, the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, those kind of groups. And he knew that there was going to be violence, that they were going to do that if Mike Pence didn't come through.
You mean Bannon knew?
Yeah.
Bannon Trump knew. They all knew.
Yeah. And, of course, Bannon got his just desserts this week. It was interesting. You know, these guys were really good at their pronouncements in front of a microphone, but they weren't very good when it came to raising their right hand and taking an oath where they had to, they were under penalty of perjury. Bannon kept complaining. He said, the January 6th committee, they wouldn't come in here and have me cross-examine them and blah, 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 blah. But when push came to shove, he wouldn't even get on the stand. He chickened out.
Well, really, what could he have said?
Well, that's the rub. He couldn't have gotten away with all the lies that he was saying.
Well, the judge wouldn't let him use any of the defenses he said he was going to use. The judge said all of that is irrelevant.
Irrelevant, right. But so we had Bannon. But there's another component to this, and that started to come out, was the complicity of perhaps the Secret Service. We had the statement that Trump wanted to go to the Capitol, and that he was furious that they wouldn't take him. However, I think the more important thing that occurred regarding the Secret Service was when Mike Pence refused to get into his limousine.
I think you're right.
And leave the Capitol.
I think you're right. And now, how did Pence know? How did Pence know not to do that?
I think that when Trump implicitly threatened him on the 5th, he knew that there was problems, and he probably knew his Secret Service detail may not have been totally loyal to him, may have been more loyal to Trump.
In other words, and they would have kidnapped him.
And once he left the Capitol, he was never going back.
Right.
And it was just one of those things. Remember, his one aide tried to get him to go into the car, and he said, you know, I know you, but I don't know whether or not I can trust the guy who's driving. And that was a big tell in this. And of course, now we have the Secret Service under criminal probe for destroying evidence. And we're going to try. I don't know if they can reconstruct their phones or whatever, but it's a pretty blatant thing when you're told to preserve records and you destroy them anyway.
Well, it's not the first time the government has done that.
No, but this is a calculus. The calculus is that what they can do to us for destroying them is less harmful than what could happen if we keep them and they're revealed. That's the calculus.
That's right. And you know that Trump, every time when he's asked that question, says it's better to do it and pay the fine.
Yeah. So that's something. You know, the Secret Service has been a problem for a long time. It goes back to November 21st, 1963, the night before the Kennedy assassination, when they were, the entourage was partying in Dallas to the wee hours. More recently, we had that incident down in Columbia, where they had to send, I don't know how many.
They sent the whole staff home. Six of them for getting drunk and hanging out with prostitutes.
Prostitutes. And they just had an incident in Israel where they had somebody who got drunk and assaulted somebody, and they had to send them home. And you know, they talk about Trump's, agents. They're not Trump's agents. They're our agents. They're not supposed
to. Except maybe they are Trump's agents.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This Ornato, he was put in a political position and then put back.
Yeah.
The IG.
And he was known. His reputation was that he was a fanatical Trump supporter.
Yeah. And the inspector general for the Secret Service was a Trump acolyte. And, they should have, the Homeland Security should have come down on him much quicker and much more harshly. You know, he should have been fired immediately.
But he hasn't been fired. And nobody's talking about it either.
No.
You're talking about it, but not anybody else.
Or at least suspend. You're out of the chain of command, buddy.
Right.
And bring in the Justice Department or whoever they have to bring in to get those phones and do whatever they can. They might be able to retrieve some stuff. We don't know. But that's the degree of rot that we had in the government and under Trump. And by the way, you said putting people in the right positions. You know, we had the attempted takeover of the Attorney General's office with Jeffrey Clark, who, by the way, this week was told that his license is under question in the District of Columbia. There's a report this week in Axios that Donald Trump wants, if he goes back in as president, has said that he wants to issue an executive order that reclassifies thousands of government workers, that makes him able to fire them at will and to replace them at will. These are not people who would have to go through Senate confirmation. In other words, he wants to infiltrate the government with loyalists.
Well, that makes sense. That's exactly what he didn't have the first time.
Right.
Somebody learned that lesson.
Yeah. And so, which makes this election, or the 2022 and then the 2024 election, even more important. But it's kind of interesting. I saw a statistic. The Fox News did not cover the hearing on Thursday night. I was flipping into it, you know, and they're doing their old game of look the other way, look at this other outrage, right through while the committee was quoting Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham from their text messages. Sean and Laura were talking about other things, but we do know that the hearings that they did cover, when they started covering them, their audience dropped precipitously. So you have the MAGA group doesn't even want to hear this. They can't handle the truth. We're back to Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And a few good men. You know, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
But it's starting to seep through. It's I saw this stat that Trump's approval rating, you know, he never hit 50% as president. He was always like in the high 30s, maybe got in the low 40s. But it's down under 30%. And it's dropped. These hearings have mattered. They've put information out. Out there, and of course, once it's out there, once you have these things, they can be shown and reshown on this. And we don't know what's going to come out in September now.
But what if they get rid of Trump? I mean, many people have said his racist movement has grown beyond him. I think that's true. I mean, it existed before he showed up on the. It was there before he ever showed up. He joined it.
Yeah.
He joined it. He made it bigger. It is bigger. He's their charismatic leader, so he goes away. After all, even Moses had to go away. So somebody else shows up. If it's not DeSantis, it's whoever, somebody.
Well, there's a lot of wannabes.
Yeah.
Pompeo.
Yeah.
Josh Hall.
Or even Pence, who they make a big deal of.
Yeah, but, Pence. And the first test, of course, is coming up soon in Arizona, where Pence is backing one candidate and Trump is backing another one.
Right, but the policies are the same.
Yeah.
It's personality differences.
Yeah, it's Tweedledum and Tweedledumber.
Yeah, except they're not dumb. They're not, they're dangerous people.
Yeah. Well, we have that situation now in Pennsylvania where we have this Mastriano campaign. I saw something this week again where Mastriano is strong. Well, it's the T of Pennsylvania and out west. Someone said that as they were driving through, they saw all these yard signs along the road for Mastriano, but none for Oz, which was kind of curious.
He's not campaigning with Oz.
Yeah.
Oz is not part of his group.
You know, I think Fetterman is more popular. Fetterman is getting back on the trail. We can talk about that. But it's, you know.
By the way, did anybody see any Shapiro signs? Did anybody see any Fetterman signs? I've
seen some Fetterman signs in places here and there. I think you'll see more as things pick up.
In my observation, in my county, people are afraid to put up these signs. And the Democratic leadership doesn't really know what to do to make them unafraid. And it's very hard to get the signs.
Didn't some of the Democratic signs find bullet holes in them up in your county?
Well, one billboard got burnt down. Some got shot up. That's true. But that's the game. That's the rules of the game. If you can't compete there. Get somebody else to run the party.
The other rules of the game used to be people would just steal the signs.
Was before they discovered that the Second Amendment had a different meaning.
Yeah. The Democrats have been criticized because they've backed candidates in different states on the Republican side, trying to get the most radical ones nominated.
You know, I understand that. That's very clever. What happens if they win?
Well, that's the question. You know, in certain states, you know, the Democrats weren't going to win if there was a fairly middle of the road Republican. They weren't going to win in Missouri with that. You know, Claire McCaskill showed that when she came up with the Aiken as an opponent and then lost the last time. But, you know, they're trying to get Greitens on the ballot to have a shot. In Pennsylvania, like you said, we had Mastriano. I think Mastriano was going to win anyway. He had the better organization. He had this underground Christian nationalist movement going for him. And Lou Barletta is not a great statewide candidate. And the opponents were split. And it's a question of how many people Shapiro can pull off the Republicans. And he's trying to do that. Arizona, we have that issue as well. The guy Peter Thiel is backing Masters is really far out there. And of course, in Ohio, again, you had Tweedledum and Tweedledummer, whether you had Mandel or J.D. Vance. And now that Vance got the nomination, he doesn't seem to be pulling in a lot of money from individuals, which is a sign there.
But the thing is, it's not like the Democratic Party is so well-funded. The party in the rural areas hasn't got any money at all. If the Democrats have people who want to put up money, why don't they give it to their parties to try to get out more of the vote rather than to play a cute game of, you know, trying to finesse the Republican primary?
I know. Well, let me tell you. They remember that Ed Randell got elected, and I think he only carried 7 counties out of 67. And Shapiro certainly wants to win Philadelphia, Allegheny, and the 3 counties around the collar, or the 4 counties around Philadelphia. That's 6, and he figures he'll pick up a couple more around there. But it's as we've discussed.
But you don't have to carry these rural counties. You just have to do better.
Right. That's what we've been discussing. You just have to hold the margins down.
Yeah.
On those.
That's
on
right.
Those.
That's what Fetterman did.
Yeah. But it's also a sign, one of the states that the Democrats wanted the most radical Republican to win was in Maryland. And they got their wish, a guy named Cox. But the bigger surprise in Maryland was the fact that the Democratic nominee who's going to go against him is Wes Moore, who is pretty well known and a pretty organized guy. But he was running against Tom Perez, among others, who was the former chairman of the Democratic National Committee. And Perez couldn't even win in his home state, which says something about the state.
But what about Moore? What does he stand on?
Well, he's certainly he's more to the left, I think, than the more centrist type of.
So he's more to the left than Perez?
Yeah.
More to the left means what? That he supports Medicare for all?
In Maryland, it's just whether or not you would sign up for the Medicaid things. And I believe Hogan has already done that.
Yeah.
He's already done that. So Maryland, I think, is going to be fairly safe for the Democrats in this thing.
Maryland was the latest place where AIPAC intervened to defeat a popular Democrat who wasn't even particularly leftist. But they wanted to show that they could get someone who was, completely lined up with their point of view on Israel. And they dumped $6 million into a congressional primary. A primary.
Yeah, this is this was a race against Donna Edwards. And the opponents of AIPAC, J Street, put in, I think, $700,000 for her, which in a normal race would be an awful lot. This is a proxy war that's going on within the Democratic Jewish community.
Well, AIPAC has done this in 9 different races now. Almost $20 million. It's a lot of money.
They've also been criticized for giving money to congressional Republicans who voted.
Didn't they contribute to 190 Republicans who voted not to recognize Biden's election?
Yeah. I'm not sure it's 190, but it was well over 100, 130, 160.
Yeah. Right, I'll go with 130 or 160, but it's a lot of people. I don't get it. I don't get it.
It's a lot. Of course, that's in primaries, so we'll see what happens in a general election.
Well, but a lot of these primaries, everybody knows that there are only 40 districts in the Congress that are truly competitive. So most of these primaries, that's the election.
Yeah. You know, one thing I want to say, one thing I think that the Democrats can use, talk about radical in Republicans, was, and I don't know whether they stumbled in it or finally got smart, is they're bringing up individual bills or bills that are basically one topic and letting the Republicans vote against them. This past week, they brought up a bill to protect contraception, the right to contracept people to use contraceptives or to obtain contraceptives. And 195 Republicans voted against that. There were only 8 Republicans in the House that voted for it, and 5 of them aren't running for re-election, and the 6th one is Cheney, and she's probably going to lose her primary. So
this is the Republican pro-AIDS group, since after all, using a condom is one of the main things you need to do to make sure you don't contract AIDS or pass it along.
This is the Republican pro-birth group.
Well, I understand that, yes. It's the same thing, right? I mean,
religious extremists who don't think that women should have sexual relations and except on their terms and things like that. But I felt that for a while, I felt that the Democrats should be capitalizing on this, that they should have social messaging going out saying, for instance, in my district here, 195 Republicans in the House of Representatives voted against people having the right to buy and use contraceptives. Jim Bogdan wants to make it 196. Don't let him vote for Matt Cartwright. Something like that.
I think that's an effective approach.
Yeah. And there were a whole host of other things there. They voted against baby formula. You know, certain things about baby formula, that sort of thing. And let Bognet defend himself on that, saying, he's either going to have to say, I'll be the 196th vote, or no, I'm going to vote against these people. And he's not going to want to get cornered, but you can corner him on that.
Well, it takes a fighting strategy. You're laying out a fighting strategy. It's not clear to me that a lot of the Democrats will be ready to accept it.
Yeah. One other thing, you know, more local here in Lackawanna County, sometimes things that don't immediately relate to politics have political consequences. This week, my school district, Abington Heights, hired a new athletic director. Now, that's nothing unusual. However, one of the people up for the job that didn't get it was a guy named Matt McGloin, who was quarterback at Penn State and was a pro quarterback with the Oakland Raiders. Very popular guy in the area. And supposedly, he's being considered as running for county commissioner next time.
In Lackawanna County?
In Lackawanna County. He'd be a shoo-in. If he's the athletic director, I don't think he would run. But he's made it clear the Republicans tried to recruit him, and he said, no, I'm a Democrat. And I think if he's on the ballot, he's a sure winner there. And
they well, let's hope he's not a Herschel Walker.
Well, that's a low bar. That's a low bar. No, he's not, you know.
Yeah. That's it for this week.
That's it for this week. And we'll see what next week brings. We may have a more international perspective next week.
Who knows? We'll see next week. Anyway, I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.